This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
A 2015 Transparency International report labeled Cameroon as one of the most corrupt African nations, alongside Ghana, Liberia, Nigeria, and South Africa.
That's Moki Edwin Kinziger reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's opposition leader has crossed into Zambia asking for asylum. DRC President Joseph Kabila says he will not seek re-election. And Ethiopia's central government takes over the administration of Eastern Somali State. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Zimbabwe's opposition leader has crossed into Zambia asking for asylum, but lawyers for Tendai Biti says Zimbabwean authorities tried to arrest him. The incident comes as the main opposition alliance prepares a court challenge to the July 30th election results. Reporter Kutsayi Zvinovashi has details.
Tendai Biti is the president of the People's Democratic Party, also known as PDP, which is part of the MDC alliance. He has been in hiding for the past few days, claiming there has been an attempt to his life. Jacob Mafume is the spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party and spoke to this reporter during the attempt to arrest Biti.
Yes, he was on the Zambian side processing his papers. They are trying to drag him to the Zimbabwean side so that they can then say they have arrested him. It's still an ongoing issue.
The attempt to arrest him failed and Biti now is in Zambia, his lawyers say. Police say Biti and other MDC alliance leaders incited people to violence during anti-government protests last week, and they are subject to arrest. Biti and other senior MDC alliance members say there have been attempts on their lives. Rashid Mukundu is a Zimbabwe political analyst.
I think the attempted arrest of Tendai Biti, whom I understand is now safe in Zambia, is a clear indication that the Emmerson Mnangagwa government is not so confident of its victory.
The MDC alliance, led by its presidential candidate, Nelson Chamisa, is preparing a court challenge to the election results. The government says that ZANU-PF candidate Emmerson Mnangagwa narrowly won the election. However, many in the opposition allege there was vote fraud, which the government denies. Mukundu believes that the MDC alliance challenge has caused ZANU-PF to panic.
It's an indication that they are jittery of a court case that Nelson Chamisa is bringing to the Constitutional Court to challenge the results that were announced by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
Chamisa's lawyer, Thabani Mpofu, is leading the legal team that will file the court case contesting the results. He says the team has been harassed and intimidated by the government. He says there have been attempts to destroy their evidence, but they remain determined. President-elect Mnangagwa has called for peace. Compared with past Zimbabwe elections, in which scores died and hundreds, if not thousands, beaten, intimidated or jailed, this one was relatively calm. However, rights activists say the army shot dead at least six protesters during last week's demonstrations, and there are concerns about new efforts to intimidate critics. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashi from Harare.
DRC President Joseph Kabila says he will not seek re-election and will support former Interior Minister Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary to replace him. The announcement today by government spokesman Lambert Mende ends years of speculation about whether Kabila would seek a third term despite a constitutional two-term limit. Today was the deadline for candidates to file for the December 23rd election. Kabila should have stepped down at the end of 2016 when his second term expired, but he invoked a constitutional clause allowing him to remain in office as a caretaker. The uncertainty fueled political tensions and sparked anti-Kabila protests that were violently suppressed. The country of 80 million people has never had a peaceful transition of power since it gained independence in 1960 from the European colonial power. In more news, one of nine candidates cleared this week to run for Cameroon's October presidential election is Akiri Muna, a lawyer and former vice president of the anti-corruption group Transparency International. Muna's supporters say they are fed up with the graft that has characterized President Paul Biya's 36 years in power as Africa's longest ruling leader. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports.
Aside from Cameroon's President Paul Biya and main opposition leader Joshua Osi, no candidate for the October election is creating as much hype as 66-year-old lawyer Akere Muna. Muna says he is the candidate to fight against deep-rooted corruption that has hindered Cameroon's development despite rich natural and human resources.
Under my government, there will be zero tolerance for corruption. Absolutely zero tolerance. This country is tailor-made for any kind of corrupt practice, any sector. The World Bank report on public expenses of 18th May says so. Procurement, prices bloated. Meetings, prices bloated for meetings. Missions, travel, prices bloated. Every single way they have to spend money, they increase it by prices.
A 2015 Transparency International report labeled Cameroon as one of the most corrupt African nations alongside Ghana, Liberia, Nigeria, and South Africa. Transparency said corruption creates and increases poverty and exclusion. It said whistleblowing is key to fighting graft, but that many people are afraid to come forward. Akere Muna says he is the leader to fight corruption. But Ngolengole Elvis, a close aide of President Biya, says Muna is wasting his time.
A good policy such as the fight against corruption should not be manipulated upon or should not be distorted or should not be rendered a mockery by those who do not understand the moral foundations, the legitimacy of that policy.
Ngole says Biya has made the fight against corruption a public policy and points to his arresting scores of his former colleagues, including former Prime Minister Inoni Ephraim. Biya's critics say he uses corruption to go after political opponents, an allegation Ngole refutes.
There is nothing to tell me that it is politically motivated. I think that the initiative is a deliberate public policy which is intended to make Cameroon a better country. If there are manipulators, we'll know how to take care of those manipulators.
Cameroon has complained about lengthy judicial processes and difficulties tracing embezzled funds in foreign banks. In 2016, the government said it had recovered $4 million in stolen public funds. The state estimates more than $150 million has been stolen. Akere Muna says he already is working on what he calls an African platform to bring back the stolen money.
I made a proposal which was adopted by the heads of state of the African Union. It was my proposal. My proposal was that all the monies that are found in foreign banks, which are frozen, should be transferred to African Development Bank. Because what I'm saying is that those banks that are keeping that money are complicit with the kleptocrats who stole the money from Africa. Because they knew that they were taking this money illegally. And they took it. So they're handling stolen goods.
Activist Edwin Faw praises Muna's lofty ideas, but says competing in Cameroon's politics will be more than a challenge for the anti-corruption campaigner.
He's never come out on a public debate or a political debate before. He's never been on any political platform. So I don't see how he can win elections in this country. In fact, he is well known out in international circles, but politically speaking in this country, Akere Muna is a non-figure in politics. And I know the English community is against his standing for elections, especially during this crisis.
Muna says he's being from southwest Cameroon, where insurgents are fighting for an English-speaking state will help spur dialogue to end the smearing conflict. But some argue the conflict has divided the population. Political science student Joseph Foyong says the opposition is too split to challenge President Biya.
The Anglophone crisis have taken a good part of the population that might have voted in favor of Akere. His percentage might have swollen if the situation in the northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon was stable. If Akere and other prominent opposition leaders like Joshua Osi, Maurice Kamto, they came up with a single opposition candidate to face Biya, Akere might have been having some hopes.
Cameroonian voters will get a better sense of the anti-corruption campaigners' chances as Muna and the other nine candidates begin campaigning for the October election. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A study by several leading HIV scientists in South Africa shows that the relationships between older men and significantly younger women are responsible for a lot of new infections in the country. The Center for the AIDS Program of Research, or CAPRISA, says men between the ages of 25 and 35 are infecting women who are on average 9 years younger than them. The investigation shows young women are mostly involved with older men because they're poor and the men provide them with life's basic necessities, such as food. But as Darren Taylor reports, some of the women and girls are also in so-called blesser relationships for materialistic reasons.
Minibus taxis jockey for position in the city of Pietermaritzburg in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province. It was here, about 4 years ago, that a man in a shiny blue suit pulled his smart car next to a then 19-year-old Koleka, as she wants to be known, and told her, "A beautiful woman like you shouldn't be waiting for a taxi." Koleka liked his crooked smile, his light brown skin, and his car. He called her the following day.
And then he said, "Hey, I love you." And say, "Why do you love me?"
Despite her skepticism, Koleka agreed to a date.
No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you.
Her suitor took her to this hotel, a universe away from the rough township taverns Koleka was used to visiting. She sipped wine in a manicured garden, saw a lot of white faces. It was the kind of place the part-time secretary had seen only in magazines.
We go there, buy some food, everything that I want.
Clothes she'd coveted, a smartphone, a trip to Cape Town. Today, 23-year-old Koleka appears slightly embarrassed when talking about her boyfriend, a married teacher and father of four.
He's a bit older than me, 82, but age is just a number.
In South Africa, men who are significantly older than their younger partners are called blessers, because they bless their young girlfriends with material goods. Koleka says she and her blesser meet as often as they're able to enjoy each other's company and to have sex, and it's always sex without a condom.
He don't like it because it's been a long time we've been dating, so even I don't like the condoms.
She says she did ask him once to put on a condom, but he fired a rhetorical question at her. Does a man eat a banana with a peel on? HIV counselor Lorna Diaz says the young women can't even dream of asking their older partners to wear condoms.
They don't really negotiate. What he wants, he gets.
Diaz says the girls don't have the power to say no to rough sex, for example. That's the kind of intercourse which more easily results in HIV transmission. Diaz says if the girls insist on the blessers using condoms, more often than not, the blessers will leave them and they'll lose access to the good things in life, Koleka has a fatalistic attitude towards HIV. If it happens, she says, she won't be happy, but she'll simply take an antiretroviral pill to stay alive, to continue enjoying the benefits of being with a blesser. HIV scientist Professor Tulio de Oliveira says treatment is indeed keeping millions of South Africans alive, but those lives aren't of the same quality as those who are HIV negative.
People with HIV, even treatment, tend to age quicker. They tend to develop all kinds of non-communicable diseases earlier, such as diabetes, stroke, hypertension.
Roosters and stray dogs vie for territory on the streets of Vulindlela, a poor community near Pietermaritzburg. Veteran HIV counselor Getwana Mahlase says most young women here either have or want blessers. The blessers, in turn, also have their desires.
These younger girls agree with whatever they want to do, but also it gives them a status that they are with it, because even younger girls are after them.
21-year-old Vulindlela resident Londeka Kumalo says the young women, who are almost always from poor backgrounds, have blessers to become visible in the community.
Having a guy that takes care of you with all this money, you become this wow girl that everyone just like wants to be.
She says some of these wow girls who have blessers are very young.
He may be 35 and he won't be looking for a 20-year-old. He'll be looking for that 16-year-old that's still in high school, that 15-year-old that's just started puberty, you know.
Kumalo says she knows many young women who strive for nothing more than to find that perfect blesser.
Eventually this man gets tired of you and you see this girl, oh, yesterday it was another guy, oh, today it's someone else. Next week it's a different man, because these men change these girls like they're just a pair of socks.
Mahlase says the blesser phenomenon is yet another dangerous dynamic in a country that's successfully treating millions but failing to prevent many new infections. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Vulindlela, South Africa.
Ethiopia's central government has taken over the administration of Eastern Somali State. The move comes 4 days after violence in the state capital, Jijiga, killed 50 people and crowds looted minority-owned properties. The government blames the tensions on regional officials. Yesterday, a government official told Reuters that the president of the Somali region had stepped down. It also has opened a commission of inquiry into the violence. In another effort to stifle unrest in the region, the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has imposed a ban on the internet that's in its fourth day. It's the first time officials have shut down access since the end of emergency rule in June. Abiy has instituted major reforms since taking office in April. He has released political prisoners, ended a ban on opposition groups, and restored relations with Eritrea. Prior to his arrival, the government regularly shut down web access to prevent youths from organizing protests and strikes. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sami Shukri is in the midst of 2 days of meetings in Washington with his U.S. counterpart Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton. Egypt's foreign ministry says the visit is intended to foster the strategic relationship. It comes a few days after the Trump administration released $195 million in military aid that had been suspended over U.S. concerns about Egypt's human rights record. Michelle Dunn is the director of the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi about the timing and purpose of the visit.
I think that the purpose of Foreign Minister Shukri's visit right now is to establish working relationships with the new U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, his counterpart, and the new National Security Advisor, John Bolton. That is really what has changed since Shukri's last visit. It's really a change of personnel on the U.S. side. And I think that is also what accounts for the decision to release the assistance that has been suspended. Let's remember that it was Secretary of State Tillerson that took that decision to suspend the aid, and now Secretary of State Pompeo decided to release it.
The spokesperson also said Shukri's meetings in Washington aim at exchanging views with the U.S. side on a wide range of regional and international issues, as well as efforts to support regional peace and stability. What do you think the focus will be on?
Well, there has been a lot of focus recently on the part of the Trump administration on a couple of issues that would be relevant to Egypt. One of them is Gaza. The Trump administration, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt, continue to be focused on trying to get some kind of plan for Gaza and, frankly, trying to get Egypt to play a bigger role in taking on responsibility for the welfare of Gazans. And I think that might be a somewhat difficult challenge for Egypt. Egypt traditionally has not wanted to take on responsibility for Gaza, which is it's an almost impossible challenge to somehow be responsible for the welfare of a couple of million Palestinians who are kind of caged in this isolated area. So we'll see where those conversations will go. There's a big emphasis right now in Washington as well on renewed sanctions against Iran. That's not something that Egypt plays a major role in, but that might well be discussed. And then I would just add that when the U.S. administration decided to release that aid that Tillerson had suspended, what they said was that they believed they had promises from Egypt to resolve the three issues on which the aid was suspended. One of those was military ties with North Korea. Another one was resolution of the 2013 convictions of 43 NGO workers, some of whom are U.S. citizens. And the third issue was amending Egypt's very harsh new NGO law. So I would assume that those issues will be raised and that there would be an assumption that because Secretary Pompeo returned the assistance in good faith that Egypt has promised to resolve these issues and it will, then, you know, that will probably be discussed to some extent.
According to Egyptian Foreign Ministry, Shukri's talks with Pompeo will tackle a wide spectrum of bilateral relations. What are the most important aspects of the Egyptian-American relations?
Well, I mean, there continues to be security assistance and security cooperation between Egypt and the U.S. There is diplomatic cooperation, particularly, I would say, on the Gaza issue, maybe to some extent as well on Libya. And there is still a bit of an economic assistance program, although sadly it is much smaller than it used to be. But I would think that this visit is going to be primarily about the two foreign ministers getting to know each other and establishing a working relationship.
That was Michelle Dunn of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Solomon Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungany in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.